Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Well, we get straight out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Next!
Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Hey there, John. We're back at it again.
Glad to be in the hot seat once again. We're going to talk drums.
We're going to talk drums. We're going to talk psychology as usual. Let me tell you, we've been getting some great responses from some non-drummers, man. Been getting messages, emails.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. We, you know, consciously made the effort to not be so drum-centric that we couldn't have other people grasping our opinions and rambling nonsense.
Absolutely. And to that extent, let me go ahead and say this. We got a very pleasant surprise over the weekend. And I'm going to go ahead and throw it out right now. We want to send some big love to our listeners that are over at drumforum.org.
Yep. Patrick Ferguson in particular, giving us a nice plug. And we saw some really positive results from that. And we hope that more of you guys jump aboard and, you know, give us some feedback and hopefully gain from our weekly chats.
Yeah, you know, it when you sit around and you know, and we're still in the infancy of this whole thing, and, you know, you monitor your stats and you kind of look, it's very, it's heartwarming. It does a body good to see those, you know, the downloads and the listens like move up exponentially. You know, yeah. I had no idea that it was going to kind of happen like that, but we're catching on, John.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's just kind of how you hope things happen, you know, more organic and, you know, someone just saying something positive and it piquing the interest of others. And, you know, I mean, it's a subject we all are certainly passionate about. And if we keep it kind of in line with where we're going, you know, there's going to be a broad and really cool subject matter coming up. And I think a lot of people will enjoy that.
Yeah. And, you know, even though we are keeping these topics broad, and perfect example is the main topic we're going to cover today. Have no fear, gearheads. We're going to talk some gear at the end of this show. Our segment today is going to deal directly with gear. I won't spill the beans just yet on what it's about, but all you gearheads are going to definitely want to tune into this one.
Yep.
So we want to go ahead and throw out the requisite plugs before we jump in. And, you know, make sure you guys visit our YouTube page, our fledgling YouTube page, as we say. It's still in the fawn stage. It's catching, you know, it's barely up on its legs. It's got wobbly legs right now, you know, but it's catching on. We're of course posting the show on YouTube, but we are also putting some videos up there of the different segments and the different songs and underappreciated drummers and whatnot that we're talking about on each show, so that you can, it's kind of our one-stop shop, you know, where you can go there. Yeah, and you can get all the information and media regarding the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. And John is threatening right now, I'm just going to let you know, that we're going to start doing those wonderful videos where we're going to show you, like, how to play the Rosanna groove. You know, we're going to show you how to play Don't Stop Believing, because there's not enough of those videos out there.
Yeah. It won't be of me. It'll be of Jeff Picaro because that's already out there.
Have you ever wondered about that?
Anyone who kind of like doubled over and almost got sick thinking about me trying to replicate.
John, this is my favorite opening line on a video. Okay, you got this drummer Jay is like sitting in front of the camera and he's going to show you how to play the Rosanna groove. The first line is this. People always ask me how you play the Rosanna groove. No, they don't ask you. They ask Jeff Porcaro when he was alive. And his videos are out there that show you how to play that groove. You know?
Oh, authority of all that is groove, please show me. Enlighten me.
We need another drum cover of how to play Give Blood by Simon Phillips. God, that is a great drum track, though, man. I'm going to listen to it again when we're done.
All right.
Yeah. But anyway, go to our YouTube page, which is just youtube.com, Drummers Weekly Groovecast, to get all of that wonderful media that we talked about, a little bit of content regarding the segments that are on our show. And then, as always, please make sure you reach out to us, comment, send your questions, send your love. We need it. Our egos are deflated. Hint, hint, coming up with the topic of the show. You can reach us at our Gmail account, our email account, which is drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And you can also tweet us at Twitter, and our handle is @DWGroovecast. I think that's it.
That's covering, covering most of the ground we need to cover.
Yeah, and
promo, like, man.
Oh, exactly. And like I said, then John's going to do his video instructional of how to play Don't Stop Believing. He loves the bell part on that.
I don't.
All right. So
it is clever.
Oh, it's absolutely clever. And you know what Spinal Tap says, right?
Clever is the key to success in the music business.
There's a fine line between clever and stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll go ahead and move on.
I don't think it's stupid. I just think it's clever.
It is clever.
I'm going to clarify that. Hi, Steve.
Steve's a good dude, man.
I love you.
Yeah. He is. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
We're going to name drop on this episode. By the way, I'm going to drop a bombshell of a name midway through this podcast. Ooh. Yeah. John, did I tell you about my gig this past weekend?
No.
I played at the Enormo Dome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. It was incredible, man. I set a new speed record also, man, for like single strokes. I was doing single strokes at like 372 BPM. You know. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it would have been more, but, man, I had a couple of guests that were in the room that, you know, I kind of got a little bit weirded out, man. You know, Vinny came by and said hi before the gig, and, you know, we were talking about our different endorsements and stuff like that, and you know, it got to the point, man, we were talking about, I'm telling you, it gets to the point when these different companies, man, are like bidding for your services. Yeah, I mean, you know what it's like, man, when it gets to that.
I know that in our first episode we talked and joked about, you know, having sponsorship.
Yeah.
And if this continues, I think Xlax might be someone interested, because it's really needed in this room at the moment.
This show needs an enema.
Yes.
So anyway, if you guys couldn't detect our sarcasm on that, that leads perfectly into our topic of the day, which is about ego, right, John?
Ego, the ever-present and ever-annoying, in my opinion, subject that comes up, you know, in conversation, rears its ugly head at gigs, mm-hmm. and oftentimes ruins musical moments. I kind of brought this subject up because I have some strong opinions about it, which I clarified earlier we were going to have plenty of on this show. I guess the best way to open it up is that someone once said to me, we play an instrument that requires ego. And I kind of bristled at that because I was thinking, like, I'm not really buying that, in that, in what is my opinion of ego. I think ego, I kind of view it in a negative context.
Yeah.
Context. And
that is a curious statement at best, if not dubious, you know?
Yeah.
And before we just go head first into this, I think it's going to be good for our listeners to understand how we're going to define ego, on this show.
I'll let you run with that.
And for our ham-fisted psychiatrists out here, we are not using ego in the strictest terms of what Freud defined ego as. Rather, we are going to define our ego as, we'll call it, an inflated feeling of superiority, is the way we want to kind of frame this. So just so you guys don't back us up against the wall and go, well, ego is a, you know, it's a psychological term that Freud used. Yeah, we get that, but that's not exactly what we're talking about here. We're using ego as more of a, of that catch-all term, as like superior, a feeling of superiority, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Great definition. And you know, that statement, you know, we play an instrument that requires ego, you know, I mean, it's like, how lame is that? It just sort of, I just don't really agree with it. And though it's not uncommon with drummers, I mean, we all know some that are pretty well-versed in egotistical behavior and playing and approach. I just think it's oftentimes really detrimental. And, you know, not just alienating a player musically, but, you know, I see it where it alienates people socially.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it makes perfect sense if you think about, you know, you're hanging out at a party with some guy who's just blah, 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 blah. And, you know, or you're a peer at a work or whatever. And I mean, you don't really, typically, you don't want to hang out with that guy.
Well, you know, John, kind of the way that I like to think about it, or the way that I frame it, is a lot of times when you're, let's say, especially in a social situation, is that most of the time you can detect, people will call it like a BS meter, so to speak, your BS meter goes off. The way I like to think of it is like, this person that is putting forth this ego, I like to say that they're very aware of themselves. You know what I mean? That's really the crux of it, is that they're very aware of, you know, who they are, and therefore they want to make you aware of it.
Right. And, you know, that gets into a little bit of narcissism, but I think I kind of want to not get too far into that, and want to sort of stick to addressing, like, just that grabbing the, you know, bull by the horns. Yeah. I'm the man. You better lock into what I got to do, and this is how it's going to be, and all that. That's kind of what I think is more detrimental to a player, right, by way of other people's perception and all that, because, you know, we all have our narcissistic ways. I mean, most, you know, 98% of people on Facebook are dealing with some form of narcissism. You know, they're posting a picture of this and that. I'm guilty of it. I get it.
I mean, people would say that 100%.
Yeah,
you know, of everybody who's got, you know, the Facebook account, Twitter account, that stuff, including this show.
Yeah.
We're aware of ourselves, so to speak.
Certainly.
You know,
but I guess when we talk about ego of that magnitude, especially in a musical setting, it's the question that I often am kind of wrestle with is, does that ego truly serve the ultimate goal of creating music with others? And I can't for the life of me be convinced that yes, it does. It just there's no way, you know, at a certain level and with players of like ability, you know, that you can't tell me that having that as part of the equation where it's just dictating is really going to serve the music.
I completely agree, and I can speak from personal experience from the simple standpoint that I know, especially earlier in my career and in my life, that I operated from a much more egocentric standpoint. And I'll address a couple of issues of why I think, or a couple of the main issues why I think ego is prominent in certain drummers. But for myself, the ego aspect of my playing was a weird sort of a combination of masking insecurity and also trying to sort of arrange my future. In other words, and by arranging the future is arranging the way I thought a gig should go.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Trying to make my future, so to speak, to make myself comfortable, ultimately, was right. What it was.
Yeah, you know? that makes perfect sense. Yeah. It's such a, you know, you always are trying to create the environment that's comfortable for you, you know, and here we're talking about what's interesting about that is, you know, there's going to be four or five other people on stage with maybe the same agenda, so that automatically is creating a weird space and you know, but there's also the part of it that you can't. I don't think you can expect to win over people with that. And like if you were the alpha dog in a pack, you know, because we're still talking about creativity and we're talking about, you know, ultimately a lot of musicians are sensitive. A lot of musicians are, you know, they want to be free in their thoughts and their ideas and, you know, to stifle that. It's just something that in the big picture is such a detriment and such a like a wet blanket, you know, on most settings like that. And you know, I guess I'm bringing this up to say, hey man, think about, are you being perceived that way, or are you guilty of creating that, you know?
Yeah, and you know, a couple of things about, you were saying about possibly being the drummer and leading, so, or being the alpha dog. Sort of by design with what we do, we are leaders.
True.
But there's a big difference in leading with a forced and heavy hand versus leading through confidence and like natural ability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can force your way in with the old egotistical heavy hand and it's my way or the highway, and it gets you immediate results one way or the other. The majority of the time, it's the other, which is you get, you know, you get some brushback, you get blowback. Sure. Especially over a little bit of time, you're going to get some blowback. But if you take a little bit of the kinder, gentler, longer term approach of like, look, here's my ability. This is what I can do. This is how I do it. And I'm confident in what I do. You will generally garner a lot more respect and serve the music, which is ultimately what this podcast is about.
Mm-hmm.
Is about serving the music, serving these other band members that you're with, by stepping back from that ego and allowing your abilities and confidence to actually lead the way and serve the music.
You know? Right.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I was hinting at before when I was saying that, speaking from experience of, you know, trying to form and shape this gig to make my comfort zone, that is also the surest way to not be in the moment, you know, and again, serve the music. You know, when your agenda is always looking forward, so to speak, to make yourself more comfortable in this musical situation and to force the music to go a certain way or the other, that is certainly not being present and actually making music and being inviting toward the other players. Right.
And along those lines too, like, look at me, you know, check me out, look what I got to offer. You know, that is also not allowing you to, you know, focus on what's happening and creating magic moments that we all live for musically. It's just not going to happen because you're so locked into something that has nothing to do with that.
Right. It's so hard to, you know, consistently, as you like to say, create magic moments, even when you are completely and totally present and, you know, and I don't want to say devoid of ego, but have at least checked your ego. It's hard enough to, you know, to consistently reach that level, much less throwing, you know, that ego, that bravado, that kind of thing out there mm-hmm. that will certainly block that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, there's a couple people come to mind, and I'm certainly a fan of both by way of their abilities and that, but I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, like, if you take Buddy or Ginger Baker are two examples of mm-hmm. amazing drummers, completely out of their mind, you know, otherwise, just massive egos. Their communication skills are just as miserable as they get. And more importantly, though they've been parts of some incredibly magic musical moments, you know, I mean, look around. I mean, do you ever see anyone playing with them that looks even remotely happy? You know, and I kind of think about that. I'm like, man, in a long-term sense, and you're thinking about career and you're talking about working with different people, and you know, you might not be in the same band in your whole career, but you know, do you want to have that reputation, or do you want to create that feeling on stage, or do you want to be the guy who's just like, I just don't care what you think, because this is how it's going to be, and I'm locking it in, and y'all better just get with it. No, that's not a good plan in sustaining a career, in my opinion.
So, John, are you saying that you don't believe in the great Colonel Parker's advice to Elvis?
No.
Which was, you ain't got to be nice to the people on the way up if you ain't never coming down.
Yeah, because eventually everybody's going to come down at some level. Or if you are not aware of that going up, you are going to create monsters that will do everything they can to bring you down.
Right.
And that's, we don't need that in this business.
Well,
I don't need enemies in this business that are looking to tear me down. And I mean, it's hard enough.
You know, you're exactly right, because we're talking, these two guys you just mentioned, they are more than one in a million from the standpoint of the abilities that they've got and the ability that they did to create magic moments, even with this horrific veil of ego. Because like you mentioned before, once you get past just their natural abilities, does anybody really have that much nicer, that many nice things to say about them past that?
No.
I mean, you know, you'll kind of hear people wax poetic about Buddy from time to time, say he was a big old teddy bear, you know,
but
I mean, listen to the tapes.
I mean, look, we all know plenty of guys who are people who are, you know, utterly charming when necessary.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just no, and I think a lot of times egomaniacs have that ability at the drop of a hat to be kind of like addicts are, and, you know, like the same kind of thing. It's all just this sort of self-serving agenda. Well, when you need to have your best face forward and, you know, charm the pants off someone to get what you want to get, well, yeah, of course you're going to have that. And you know, the like in Buddy's case, the people that I've seen wax poetic about him are the few people that he really respected and looked up to, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's go talk to the third trombone player from 1968.
Right.
You know, and that might be a little more truthful about, you know, his real personality or his real approach to people. And so, you know, I love Buddy, man. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Would I ever want to work for him? No.
Yeah.
Do I think his just my way or the highway approach, seemingly 100% of the time, is really a great thing for a musical setting? Probably not.
Yeah.
But, you know, man, I've thought a lot about this subject. And, I mean, personally, I want to be the opposite of that. And what I mean by that is I don't have any desire to be intimidating or uncompromising and have people fear or resent me. I mean, just as a human, I hate that. You know, I would hate that someone feels that way about me. And look, I'm not perfect. I mean, I know I've rubbed people the wrong way. And, you know, sometimes I might be like, no, this is how it's going to be. Or, you know, but in general, that's just not how I want to be perceived. And I mean, man, I'd, as a drummer, I've always viewed it like, man, I think there's more to be said for and more to benefit from being like inviting and to be, you know, embraced. And that's not to say you don't do your job without, you know, confident. You should be confident. You should be secure in your ways. You should be able to communicate effectively, even if it's a disagreement. All of those things. You can't just be a pushover. But, you know, to be trusted and to be an asset, to be viewed as an asset and a team player. I mean, man, I want to be that unshakable foundation. I want to be that fluffy, comfortable cloud you float on all night. I want to be consistent and selfless and be more of a strong, silent leader, not a, you know, just putting your fist down kind of thing. And man, from my experience, things get way better musically if you are in that place. And that's just something that I guess I'm encouraging people, and I'm talking to you egomaniacs, and look, I know a lot of you know who you are. Just try it. Just look at things a little differently. Look at, you know, the reality of I can be all that I want to be as a drummer with a completely different approach.
I'll tell you this, I feel better leaving a gig.
How could you not? You know, I mean, I know there's the rare individual that just like, I don't care what anybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and when I say rare, I mean rare. Because we're humans, man. And that just, you want approval. You need approval. You want camaraderie. You want communication. You want connection. I mean, man, look at Facebook again. There's a perfect example. I mean, look. Some people are like, Facebook's annoying, blah, blah, blah. I love that crap because I've connected with people that I never would have otherwise. And I've gotten to know people and where they're coming from way more. Sometimes, you know, maybe not in a real positive way even.
Right.
You know, like their politics or their, you know, approach to life. Maybe I'm like, hey, man, that's someone I'm not that interested in being that close to. But we want to connect. So just being this brazen, unfeeling individual, man, especially in a creative setting, I just don't think it's really in your best interest.
You know, John, while we're on this exact point that you're making here, I'm going to do what they call in the broadcasting business a callback. And I'm going to call back to our first episode of Stage mm-hmm. Bullies. This episode is almost the anti-stage bully episode because you could very easily say that ego is the driving force behind a lot of the motives of the stage bully.
Yeah,
you know,
I would say mostly the case.
Yeah, and so to your point that you made here of trying to leave that behind, yeah, you do become a more feeling, sentient sort of musician on the bandstand in the studio. Even in the teaching studio from that standpoint, you know, to be able to get your points across, not with, again, the heavy-handed, heavy-fisted approach, but again, like you said, you're the fluffy cloud for the band to sit on. You are the couch for the band to sit on. Make a point here, not for the band to lay on, mm-hmm. but for the band to sit on. You want to be this inviting person that invites them to play with your ability, with your skill, you know, with your understanding of the music, to make those magic moments.
Yes, that is, you are dead on. That's exactly right. And I mean, to me, you know, like being that strong, silent leader, I mean, like confidence and trustworthiness, you know, these are, in my opinion, these are assets of a successful drummer. And I think that we've touched on more than once, you know, how we're accompanists. And those mm-hmm. things need to be part of your psyche and your approach and your, you know, contribution to music.
Absolutely. And John, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I was going to give you my two big points that I had mentioned to you earlier when I was kind of doing my research and prep for the show, that I feel like as drummers, we pretty much have two main issues that drive this ego. And one is the need to impress other drummers and other musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like to have people think good about us, whether it be from our playing ability or, hey man, this guy's got an endorsement with Ludwig, he must be a big deal, right?
Right.
And then the other big point that drives an ego is just, we use this ego to mask insecurities. You know, it helps us on our personal level try to elevate ourselves in our own mind above other people, much less trying to impress that same ideal that, hey, we're trying to impress you that we are elevated above these other people as well.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. You know, ego, it's just, to me, it's just self-centered BS, man. It plays into stereotypes and jealousy and resentment and a lot of miscommunication. And it, you know, it hinders the decision making on and off the bandstand. You know, just like I wrote down a couple of things, like just in a fairness in of itself, your ego might not allow you to see, like, man, I'm snaking someone's gig, or mm-hmm. you know, we see that happen. It's a drag, and that a lot of times it's like, well, why shouldn't I have that gig? Well, you know, what about the humanity of it? Maybe that guy is, you know, like, got some mouths to feed and a mortgage to pay, and you just don't care about that because your ego is so rampant that you're just like, no, man, I want that gig and I'm going to take it. Well, that's a drag, man. That's again, the humanity of that is, it's just void. And I don't think that, you know, given the gifts we've been given, that's something that you should just be brazen and indifferent about. I just think that it's sort of that awareness needs to be part of the equation here. And, you know, like another thing I want to challenge everybody to do, and we've all been guilty of it. But man, like this talking about other players, that's such a ridiculously common thing. And I kind of want to, just bring that reality to the surface and say, hey guys, I mean, look, most of my closest friends are drummers, and we have a fraternity that is unlike any other instrument. I truly believe that, because we just sort of, I mean, I don't know if it's part of like understanding, you know, how a lot of times we're the underappreciated part of the equation musically, we're not out front, we're not getting all the love, whatever it may be. I think in general, though, drummers tend to be aware that, you know, they are accompanying and they are a foundation. They're not the sparkle on top, the sprinkles on the cake, you know, the icing on the cake. And that's a cool, but we kind of relate to each other in that sense. So it's like, let's just make a concerted effort to embrace and lift and support and really speak positively of each other, because there's plenty of people that aren't.
Oh, yeah, well.
You know, and we're always getting dogged. It's always our fault. If something doesn't feel right, or if it's something, you know, we're always catching the crap, even though it might not be true. But let's be each other's advocates, man.
Oh, yeah, the backbiting thing, man, is a, boy, that is a serious pet peeve of mine, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, there's an insecurity at its finest.
Insecurity, comparison. You ever heard the old, what's the old saying, like, comparison's the thief of joy? I think it was...
True.
Yeah, it was credited, I believe, by Teddy Roosevelt, I think it was. But yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, that's another thing that leads to some crazy backbiting, some crazy, you know, ego-driven things.
Yeah.
You know, when guys want to compare themselves to other players and why this guy's got this gig and
you know
why I don't have it.
We all could be better stewards of those conversations too, in that sometimes we just sort of go along with it, or we don't want to be confrontational and be like, you know, you're dogging so-and-so and yeah, whatever, kind of giggle along with it. But, you know, maybe it's time to just say, hey, man, you know, I think he's got this together and I like this. And when I communicate with him, it's really great. And we're I consider him a friend. So, you know, I'd rather not talk about him. You know, maybe we need to take it upon ourselves to put some, you know, breaks on that, you know, as just being better humans and being peers. Like, let's think about, you know what, I'm not going to be a part of that. And I'll do my best, like I'm asking you to.
I'll tell you this, if there's any one profession that needs to not cannibalize themselves and or eat their young, it's musicians.
Is that not the truth? Whew.
But boy, it is. Man, boy, it seems to be prevalent.
It is. And here's a challenge, you know, that we're going to put out there for you guys. Like, man, just let's put a stop to it the best we can. It's never going to go away.
Boy.
But we all know we're better than that and can be better than that. Yeah. So let's make a mindful effort here.
And man, let me tell you, everybody is, I'm going to tell you just a real quick story that, John, you'll get a kick out of it because it involves St. Louis. But I mean, top level professionals that people don't even know are not immune to that whole backbiting thing. And that's where the story comes from. Probably, I guess, 25 years ago, I was in St. Louis at that place over on Laclede's Landing, Mississippi Nights.
Yeah.
Remember that place?
I sure do.
I was there to see Tony Williams' quintet one night. And it was one of those things where the club itself, it was like, for lack of a better term, general admission. You mm-hmm. know, you bought your ticket and then you got a table to sit and see the thing. So people would line up prior to the opening of the doors to get in so you could get the seat that you wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a trumpeter that was in Tony's group at that time named Wallace Roney. And it's anybody who knows this guy knows that it's not a secret that this guy's first, last, and everything was Miles Davis in the way that he played. Played a little bit flat, played this real mysterious, you know, very blues-based, noodly kind of, you know, kind of thing that Miles played. Real atmospheric kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was standing in line and I was listening to these guys just destroy Wallace Roney. So, I mean, it can happen to anybody. And these guys were just giving Wallace Roney, I mean, giving him the old right there, Fred.
That's so lame, man.
It was ridiculous, man. I just had to kind of laugh a little bit. And then, the coda to this story was, they were staying somewhere fairly close and within walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
Mulgrew Miller and Wallace Roney walked across the street to go into the club. Those same guys were like, oh, hey, man, how you doing?
Of course.
How you doing, Mulgrew? How you doing, Wallace?
What's up, my brothers? Come on.
Yeah. So
that's a little funny crap, story. Man. Yeah. Again, man, we've all been guilty of it. Just let that crap go, man. Just look at the positives. You know, when I got out of any kind of egotistical mode and agenda, man, I it was incredible what I started learning listening to people. You know, like I'm hearing things differently and hearing approaches differently and gaining from it, as opposed to my arms crossed and blah, 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 there ain't nothing, and gaining nothing.
Right.
You know, so there's benefits to not closing off an open mind, and benefits to not, you know, being driven by this ego thing. And, you know, there's a lot of, to kind of wrap it up, you know, how can we avoid the pitfalls of ego?
Oh man, we've told you all the pitfalls. Now we'll tell you kind of how we think you can avoid that. And You've already said the big one, and that is you got to be aware. You have to be mindful. I always like to tell people that, especially when you're put into a situation where you have to respond to something, it's better to respond than to react. Amen. You know, yeah, you know what I mean? And so, you know, again, step back, be mindful of the situation, think before you speak. Even if you have to like sit there and they think, well, this guy's not paying any attention, sit back, take a beat or two and respond. Don't react to the situation. Respond. Be mindful. Be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of what your attitude, be aware of what your response, what your reaction will do to the overall vibe of the gig, the overall vibe of the social situation that you're in at that moment.
Even awareness of individuals and their mood and their vibe, you know, it can be really...
Absolutely. And don't allow other people to drag you down if that's the case. If other people are reacting negatively, if other people, be the bigger person. Again, respond, don't react. Be mindful, be aware of where you're at. Do the best that you can with the situation, and then walk away knowing that you did the right thing. Feel like $1 million. Serve the situation, serve the music.
Right on. Yeah. You know, I think from a playing standpoint too, you know, it's important that you trust your abilities, because sometimes, you know, like a negative opinion of your playing on a gig can just whack you out, and, you know, someone gives you a weird vibe or says something kind of flippant. Just trust your abilities and, you know, be respectful and accommodating. But I think that from my experience, you know, when you're talking about a lot of opinions on stage and an approach to music, whatever the genre is, the style, you know, I think it's important to kind of explain your opinions to people you work with if you're going to discuss it, you know, like explain your opinions about your approach and how you approach things, and, you know, your goal as a timekeeper regarding tempos and feels and volume. I mean, just communicate, you know, like, hey, here's where I'm coming from. And you can be willing to listen. You have to be willing to listen to other people's opinions about it too, and maybe sometimes they might, you know, hey, I'll give it a shot. Or sometimes you'll be like, man, I really feel strongly about this, like that tempo, you know, it just loses all swing, and as the backbone, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. I want it to have that space where it can, you know, end up being this groove that's undeniable and everybody's locked in, and you know what, those things are, I think you can avoid a lot of egotistical response and reaction if you're communicating with others that way too.
Being mindful, aware, and flexible should not be perceived as a weakness.
No.
It's not.
No. And anyone who tells you otherwise is someone who is not going to help you succeed in life in any way, shape, or form. And again, man, when we talk about these things, I know I can speak for myself, and I probably speak for Phil. We're giving you this insight by way of mistakes we've made. Mm-hmm. Everything we've talked about, I've been guilty of. And I'm not proud of that. But, man, I mean, I certainly learned that that approach didn't do a whole lot of good for me. And getting further away from any of that, my career and my relationships and my gigs and my playing and my self-worth has improved dramatically. So, you know, that I'm encouraging you to look in the mirror and really figure out, you know, that ego is just, it's a detriment, and that's all there is to it.
It's a means to an end.
Yeah, but it's not, in this business and in this approach to what we do and the give and take and the push and the pull, you gotta check it.
And John, if you will allow me this little bit of time here, mm-hmm. I'll wrap up this segment by name dropping.
All right.
I'm going to use just a little quick story about a time that I met the great, the wonderful, the fantastic Jack DeJohnette. Yeah, I like that. And it was at a big convention, like a PASIC convention, mm-hmm. that he was at. And I caught him in like the exhibition hall, just kind of walking around, tapping on stuff, you know. And if anybody who's met Jack DeJohnette before, he's, especially when you're like 21 years old, he's a larger than life figure. He's kind of a big guy, kind of a tall guy. Talks in like these cryptic kind of sensei style, you know, terms. And so at that time, he was, you know, at the height of like the Keith Jarrett trio. He had the Jack DeJohnette special edition that was kicking it hot and heavy. He was playing gigs with Matheny and Herbie Hancock and whatnot, mm-hmm. you know. So, I mean, he was at the top of his game. And so...
Peaking,
man. So I went up to him, this sheepish kid, and I'm like, Mr. DeJohnette, what can you tell me about organic playing and how to like play organically? So first off, drummers, go do a little anthropology if you don't know what organic drumming is. The first time I heard that term, it was from Bob Moses. And DeJohnette and Bob Moses played in a group back in the early 70s called Compost. And DeJohnette and Bob Moses were both masters of this style of organic playing. And I asked him that question, and he kind of thoughtfully looked over at me at the sensei, and he goes, "You gotta strip yourself of ego, and you gotta really get to know yourself." So there were a few more things he said that, but those were the two biggest things that
really stood out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Stood out, you know. And basically my comments that I was making throughout this podcast was just a bit of a explanation and kind of an extrapolation of those two things that I think that DeJohnette was saying to me,
mm-hmm.
you know. Because I'll tell you this, one of the things I think that makes the greats from the standpoint of what we hear this stuff in their playing, a lot of times is that this greatness is not necessarily aware of itself.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. You know, there are times that things can be cheeky and be aware of itself and be great. But I think the majority of the things that we hear when we hear true greatness, it's just in the moment.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, like the little thrash drummers that they're really not supposed to be able to play what they play for like 2 hours, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's kind of like a really heightened, you know, version of that with someone like Jack. Like, you're not really supposed to be able to do that. And I don't appreciate you coming down from whatever planet you are from and doing this and smashing our ego into a million tiny pieces. But seriously, man, like, put that in perspective, man. Jack DeJohnette is saying, you got to strip yourself of ego.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, if anyone could be justifiably egotistical, it'd be Jack. He's unbelievable. And he's letting go of that.
Some might say arguably the greatest musician of all time, man. This guy,
unbelievable.
He's an equally fantastic piano player.
And that's his mindset.
Composer the whole nine yards, and that's his mindset.
And I mean, if you just look at, the gigs he's done, that alone could be cause for insane ego.
Yeah.
And it's just not.
He played with a guy named Mike Davis.
I'm lost.
It was supposed to be funny. It kind of fell flat. I was going to let it sit there and marinate for a second.
Is Dying. Mike offended right now?
He's dead.
Oh, that's probably good.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. If nobody else got anything out of this Ego podcast other than we tied together thrash drummers and Jack DeJohnette, that's never been done before. Yeah, breaking new ground there.
The gift of my abstract mind or wandering mind or maybe slowly...
John's
losing my mind. Those things come out and can and on occasion be entertaining.
John the Jackson Pollock of drumming. Right. Well, we talked about earlier at the beginning of the show that we've got a little gear segment for you guys this week, and we're going to talk about cymbals.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about cymbals today. And John and I were just kind of kicking around this topic about, when you've got cymbals, you got them, right? There ain't no tuning on those suckers, right? I mean, you got them. And so it's really important that you have the proper cymbals for the proper application, for the proper gig, since not a lot of tuning done there. You can do the old hack thing. You can throw a chain on that cymbal and give it a little bit of a sizzle, but that doesn't change the characteristics of the cymbal, that's for sure.
Or the playability by way of, you know, certain approaches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it go ahead.
Yeah, so what we're going to do today is we're going to talk to you a little bit about choosing the right cymbal for the right gigs.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, I have many friends who are cymbal obsessed and will roll their eyes at this sort of idea that we're going to discuss this, but
I'm one of them because my ego's out of check.
Well, yeah, well, that's okay. You'll listen back and grow in leaps and bounds, I'm confident, to this particular podcast.
I appreciate your confidence.
Well, anyway, you know, again, I know a lot of you guys are really locked into having a million different cymbals for a million applications, but there's plenty of people who don't really think along those lines, and it really can make or break a gig and your vibe and your sound and even sometimes how people perceive you, you know, as a player. But, I mean, obviously the most important thing as a working player who does a broad amount of gigs, you know, your first goal is to have what I call a workhorse setup. It's sort of, you know, a good all-purpose ride, probably medium, you know, medium thin in weight, and has enough stick definition, that some crashes that are nice and not too either overbearingly bright or just so ridiculously low pitched and dark. Good set of hi-hats, you know, newbie being the litmus test, that kind of thing.
And John, we're talking about, just to clarify here, this is for a gig that you're going to have to straddle a whole bunch of different styles.
Right. Covering a lot of ground. It might be kind of low volume at first, might be cranking it later, you know, having that really versatile set is your first order of business. And man, I think, I want to clarify too, I think when it comes to investment, cymbals are way more important than drums. Because you can make an average drum set sound pretty good. You can't make intermediate cymbals sound great.
What I tell people is, yeah, you can make a $10,000 set of Gretsch USA Customs sound like crap with bad cymbals.
That's very true.
You absolutely can. Though your overall sound will just be destroyed, and vice versa. You can take a beginner level or a midline kit and have some really nice sounding cymbals and elevate that kit to a new level.
So true. That is a great point. So you know, the goal is to, you know, at least have that, invest in a really great sounding workhorse cymbal setup, and then we can kind of build from there. And I know, Phil, you have a lot of great thoughts on that by way of.
Yeah, I was letting John take the workhorse set of cymbals, and I was going to take it from a slightly different standpoint, and I was going to take it from specialized sets of cymbals, and I'm going to use the what I would consider to be the two polar opposite styles of cymbals, and I wanted to talk about like a straight up rock pop gig and the cymbals that I would use versus using a little bebop kit playing straight ahead or contemporary jazz and the kind of cymbals that I would use for that. And I'll also talk a little bit about kind of what I listen for as well on this, because again, once you buy a cymbal is a cymbal. You got it for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. And the quick rule of thumb that I use, or that when I explain to people sort of how I choose these cymbals, would be this, and then I'll get a little bit more into each individual cymbal. If I'm thinking in terms of rock and pop gigs, I think in terms of drums tuned a little lower, cymbals pitched a bit higher. And that's all around the kit, hats, crashes, rides. When I think in terms of like acoustic, straight ahead, jazz type gigs and cymbals, I think smaller, higher pitched drums. You can think in terms of like 18-inch bass drum, sort of small. And then I think of larger, thinner, darker sounding cymbals. So you kind of have the opposite.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, as far as those go. And then basically what I listen for is this. In both settings, whether it be rock or pop, I do not particularly like for my cymbals to cut. Now, I know we're talking about abstract terms here, but that seems like a term that you hear people talking about all the time. Oh, this cymbal, it's got like a cutting bell. It's got a cutting crash sound. I much prefer my cymbals to blend even at a higher volume level. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily like for cymbals to stand out. And to kind of further that point, what I'm listening for whenever, we'll take the rock cymbals for a second. My personal preference are larger crashes. I like 17s, 18s, 19s. I like larger rides. I like 22s, 24s for that. And on all of those cymbals, one of the things in particular that I listen for is when I hit a cymbal either soft or loud, I do not like to hear a predominant pitch that stands out. No. I don't like that. I like a complex array or mishmash of sounds where no one particular pitch stands out, whether that be the ride or the crash, or for that much, even the hats, John. Mm-hmm. And then in particular on the ride, I like a ride that has good stick definition, but again, I don't want that thing to be so pingy that I have to work too hard on the thing to where I have to, like, my arm falls off working on it. Because, you know, when you get the full band involved, these overtones, undertones, again, that are not these strident overtones or undertones, but these warm, washy overtones, they, again, blend in with the band, and your stick sound will come out, you know, it will come out with the rest of the band or come out over top of the band. Not in a cutting way, but in a blending way. I like the bell of the ride cymbal to not be, as they say, separated. I don't like the separated sound of a bell, that super high-pitched laser-type bell. I like the sound of the bell to be integrated as well. Now, so that's my little quick say on like the rock and pop stuff. If I go to the bebop, straight-ahead, small-kit jazz-type thing, I like darker, warmer, lower-pitched cymbals. Again, I like the bells of my cymbals. I don't particularly use crashes, so to speak, on those kit. I use normally just two cymbals. I'll use the proverbial left side ride and then the main right side ride.
Right.
Both of them are in the 20 to 22, sometimes 23-inch range in that ballpark. And again, I like an integrated bell on the cymbals. I don't like that so-called separated bell sound. I like a warm, lower pitched ride in both cases, the left side and the right side ride, with the left side being slightly higher pitched. Again, good stack definition, but a lot of warm undertones underneath. Mm-hmm. And then again with the hats, I like hats that are medium in pitch. Again, we're talking in these abstract terms, but I don't like heavy, thick hi-hats. They've got to feel right. John, I know we talked about that in a previous podcast. They got to feel right as well as sound right whenever you play the hi-hats. And I don't like for them to cut or ride out above the band. They need to have rather that lower pitch. If you want to call it a drone without being a specific pitch, it's got to be a warm, complex layer of sounds.
Right on. I think that's just great focused advice and approach to picking cymbals for gigs, and really appreciate that, Phil. One thing that I've noticed is, you know, we all can be really guilty of trends. You know, oh, I gotta have this, I gotta have that. Oh, that's hot now and all this. And herein is the problem with that. And what you need to be careful about, like, you know, the trend right now is a big, nice 24-inch warm ride and a 20-inch crash that's dark and a 17-inch hi-hats and Steve Jordan-esque kind of thing, or, you know, some of the, you know, like, well, that's all well and good in, like, your indie band, that your sound is all about that and you've built something around that and you're really going for that thing and you're doing gigs where that really works. But man, you don't get so caught up in this stuff where, you know, you're like called for a wedding band and you're taking that setup and you're doing, you know, a bunch of old R&B and pop stuff. You know, it's like, wait, man, that's so far removed. That's like using a 2002 Heavy on a piano trio gig. You know, think realistically about that. And that's why I say investing in cymbals and having an array and having choices is important. Don't get locked into these trends, man. If that big, warm, crazy, dark, minimal sound is your thing, and that's great, in the right context, more power to you. But have some options to get you through some other things. Because, you know, unless you're on the road with your band and making it and doing well, you know, we're going to be doing diverse gigs. And just think about that investment, you know, and think about how you are approaching, you know, your selection with cymbals for a gig. It's about being a pro and knowing the difference. Those are important things.
Yeah, and you know, boy, one just brilliant thing that John said there in that last statement was he was talking about investment, and he was talking about knowing the right instrument for the right style and whatnot. When you are making this investment, when you are buying these cymbals, here's practical Phil's come into the mic real right. quick. I don't know of any drum store that wouldn't allow you to bring your existing cymbals in, because there is a bizarre phenomenon. I don't know what this is about. It's got to do something with like subconscious thing. How many times have you gone into a store to play and you play a cymbal, whether it be a ride or crash or hats, and you think, man, this thing sounds fantastic, and you buy it and you get it home, and it's the exact same thing that you've already got?
I'm guilty of that.
It's amazing, man,
especially
how that works.
Especially crashes.
Like, yeah, yeah.
How do I end up with four 18-inch crashes that sound the same?
Sound exactly the same.
It's stupid.
Now, there is some benefit to that, but especially when you're trying to actually get something that's a little bit different that complements the rest of your set, mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to talk to the store manager owner and say, hey man, I've got my cymbal bag out in the car. I just need to bring it in and put them up on stands and make sure I'm not buying the same cymbal again, mm-hmm. unless you're wanting to buy the same cymbal is all I'm saying. But yeah, I've been guilty of that before. When you go and you're looking for a different sound, looking for a different ride, you go into a shop and all of a sudden you buy the exact same thing.
Yeah, man, that is I've made that mistake a few times. And also the weird phenomenon of it sounds amazing, and then you get it on a gig and you just don't connect with it. It's so weird how that can happen. Ride cymbals are typically more the guilty party in that respect, where you think it's locked in and you get it on a gig and you're like, oh, this just isn't working.
That's an uncanny thing, because I have a thing with one particular line of cymbals that, to me, when they're by themselves, they sound like $1 million. When you put them inside of a recording or inside of a live playing situation, they leave me cold. It's bizarre, man. It's bizarre.
And we're talking about mature ears here, you know? Like, mm-hmm. God, if I had, you know, I've owned so many cymbals and recorded so many cymbals. And so it's not just lucky guess. It's like you have a pretty refined ear.
Yeah.
And it still can be...
can trick you.
Off base. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. I love the idea of taking stuff in and making sure it all matches up, or you're avoiding, you know, duplicating what you closely have.
Occasionally, the appearance of practical Phil yields the desired results.
Hey, man, that guy's all right in my book.
Yeah, you know, he shows up every now and then when his ego permits it.
Just spouts his expertise and then walks away with a big grin on his face.
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm about to walk away. It was a good show today.
Yeah, man. Ego, yuck. Yeah. Get a handle on that stuff.
We're your own little self-help book right there in your phone, right?
That phone is... it distracts me from my ego often, I'll tell you that much.
All right, John, I think we've done enough damage for the day, or for the week, actually. Let's say that.
Right? I like it. Yeah, yeah. We are a weekly.
We're weekly, and we know you guys wait on bated breath every Monday, right?
Let's hope so.
Every Monday, that's right. Go download us on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Please rate us also. I can't tell you how much that helps us.
That's awesome.
Yeah, rate us on iTunes. Show us some love. Send us emails. DrummersWeeklyGroovecast@gmail.com. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/DrummersWeeklyGroovecast. Twitter @DWGroovecast.
All right.
Until next week.
Hey, shut your pie hole and be the big fluffy cloud. Okay?
Bye.